Get everybody seated. We don't want anyone coming in and out. The Board of Education has been in closed session since 8:05 this morning. We will now go back in open session at 12:30 p.m. I don't need to have a motion to go into open session. I do need to get one of my board members here. Is anyone? Okay, I have a bottle of water I could have handed her. Sorry about that. In this section, each board member will be asking a question of the presenter. We will be taking 15 minutes to do that. And so you have five questions in 15 minutes and plan accordingly. Then we'll have a little break, and then the candidate will do a presentation as if in a board meeting or a faculty type meeting. All right, we will begin with Christy Cooley asking the first question.
All right, thank you very much for being here today. My question is, how do you define 21st century learning for students, staff, and environments?
I see it as it's student success. Maybe I'll need to do that. Thanks. It's student success by design. It is not happen chance. It's not, and that same with faculty and support personnel. It is something that we create as a community or as a school administrative team, as professional learning communities. It is designed learning, and it is responsive to the research that we are aware of and that we see could be best fit for our students. So it's moving forward. It's assessing what is needed and then setting goals based on where we see our students, where those students are, needs are most prevalent. Thank you.
Okay, I have a two-part question. So, describe your experience working with changing demographics. This includes socioeconomic, cultural, and language diversity. And then share how you might use your experience and insight to close the achievement gap.
Well, my experience has mostly been with the socioeconomic. So the Title I students of poverty, students of low socioeconomic status. As for language, Spanish-speaking students who have moved to the area who are first-time language speakers of English, and using the resources that are given or supported by the district, that has been key. Utilizing funds from Title I in an effective manner, identifying the research and using the expertise of those individuals who have dealt or worked with the students that are in a low socioeconomic situation, and then actually building that community support, working with their parents who may not understand the resources that are available for them, the students with coming from a diverse culture that may speak a different language, accessing the ESL program, accessing possibly software that is available to help guide them, creating an environment where they can become more familiar with the English language. The PSYOP training, making sure we are addressing reading, writing, listening, and speaking skills, avoiding idioms, just some the basics of what research has shown us help support those students most, and then implementing that with fidelity and not taking it for granted that what's happening that what we say we are doing is actually happening, but actually following through and making sure that that is the case.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, tell me about a time you implemented a shared vision where a school in which multiple visions existed. And then please describe in detail the process you followed.
Okay, so I can appreciate this question. As a principal of a school that we had made a decision as an administrative team and as the teacher leadership team, that we needed to focus on students, that we needed to be a student-centered school. We were not. We were mostly teacher-centered. What we did, our schedule, how we offered our classes was based on what was best for teachers or what they felt their needs were. Their voice was heard most. So I would say there were different visions for that school at the time. Coming together, creating professional learning communities, that in and of itself was difficult because people had a different vision of what that looked like. What does collaboration look like? What I did and what our administrative team did and the teacher leadership team, we had a two-day school or site-based in-service where we identified our norms, what it was we all had in common, which is student success. We all want to see them do well. So we identified our commonalities, and then from that point, identified the norms. What is it that we see our school becoming? I asked the question of them, where do you see this, our school, in 5 years? Gathered the survey from that, posted that during the in-service, and it varied from each person. We did also an activity it's called ABCD, which school would you prefer to attend? And the faculty had to participate in this scenario of what school would you want to attend? What school would you want your child to attend? And what type of school do you work in? So just that activity and starting to move the mindset to a more cohesive group, that collaborative group, it did not happen in one sitting. It's taken place over several in-services and a lot of professional development. I would say I held firm to what I felt myself and the administrative team and the teacher leaders, our vision was for the school, where we wanted to be. We wanted to be student-centered. And that's what drove the conversation.
Thank you. Please describe your experience in developing a schedule for classes for a school. Who or what should be involved? When should the process begin? How do you address multiple competing priorities in scheduling?
That's a very good question. Scheduling really, actually at this time, scheduling started, the course description book had to be compiled. We were working on that in December and January, and it causes a lot of consternation with curriculum directors if that is not ready to roll out by the 1st of March when the freshmen our eighth graders are ready to enroll in high school. The individuals involved in that, the teachers need to be involved in that. I think knowing what they have defined as their course description, I need to know what that is. What is your course description and how is it aligning with our curriculum? Is there that vertical alignment? Is there that horizontal alignment? Do we agree on what English 9 is? And the counselors it's very important that they're involved in that coursework, or in the course description book, or in the scheduling. The singleton classes, when you say how do you address multiple competing priorities, singletons are very difficult. When you look at an orchestra, maybe there's only one section of a certain orchestra or a calculus class, and you have multiple students wanting it, or it competes with their orchestra class. It is a matter of really taking that into consideration, looking at what's best for students, and making it available for as many as possible. And if it means an additional class, maybe that's a conversation with the team, increasing the offerings that are available for students. Hopefully that has answered that. Competing priorities, usually the singletons, I think, create a challenge for scheduling. And I also, my my vision or my hope would be that we could actually schedule so that you could, if possible, take preparatory periods and make sure, like, if your English classes could be taught in such a way that English teachers could share a prep period so that they could collaborate during the school day and not just on an early release time, but actually looking at that and just seeing if that could work for them. Because the more they have an opportunity to meet and collaborate and review data, I think it would be better interest of the students.
All right, thank you.
Mine is a 17-part question. So see, now it'll be cinchy, won't it? Okay. What qualities, abilities, and skills do effective instructional leaders demonstrate? And the second part is to tell me your strongest characteristics as an instructional leader.
I think time prioritizing. I don't know if you can call it management of time, but the priority of time. To become an instructional leader, you have to be out of the office. I think you need to be out in the school. I think you need to be in the classrooms or maybe conducting a walkthrough observation or just an observation, visiting with teachers who are in their planning time, just checking in with them, creating an environment where being an instructional leader is the priority. There are times, and I have it, I have to be real about it, you can get stuck at your desk. And there are moments when I'd rather not go into the office because I know I have a meeting at another building, and if I go in, I may not make it to that meeting on time because the line begins. And it's important that I set that priority and people are aware of what is most important. You ask my strongest characteristics of being an instructional leader. I feel that my ability or what I've been able to do to empower teachers to be teacher leaders and to have a voice and to allow them to share their ideas and then to implement them. We have such amazing professionals in our schools, and when we rein them in, we take that, wind out of their sails, talking about an idiom there, but taking them, holding them back, when really they may have collaborated with their association and they've brought some ideas to the table. It's giving them that voice to implement those ideas, because in all reality, I believe we are all in, this is all in the best interest of students. So empowering teachers to be teacher leaders.
Can you give me an example then of where you might have had an issue where you, like you say, you would empower the teachers to be the leaders and to help implement a solution? Can you give an example when you've done that?
In the state of Idaho, we have mathematical thinking for instruction. It's a required course for all math teachers at the high school level, middle school, and then K-8 or K-6 teachers. Some of the teachers went and they completed the course. And there was an individual who came back from that course and said he wanted to do this. Because it's very different from the way we had been instructing in math. And he was nervous because his evaluation would not look, when I came to the classroom to evaluate, he said, "You won't see me state the objective. It's going to be different." But encouraging him to go ahead and that I'm a willing participant to see what happens. What he did is he implemented the MTI ideas, which are very, the students have to basically, they discover their learning. So they're discovering what the concept he's planning to teach that day based on the problem that he gives them. And there's a lot of interaction. Students report their answers to the entire class. The class reviews their answers as they're listed around the room, and they identify the good mathematical practices and where there might have been an error. And as a community in that classroom, they're supporting each other. well, he didn't state objectives. My teacher evaluated, to fill that out, it didn't work. But what he did worked, and he had a great relationship with students. He had students who were engaged in math. He did not have someone with his hoodie over his head with his head down on the desk. They were all participants. And he is actually now at the district level, he is someone that we have identified to help other teachers, other math teachers throughout the district accept this type of teaching model.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. We will now go to your presentation.
Oh, okay. Very good. So, as I looked through the information on that was sent to me, I have to say I was so impressed with the progress or the path you're taking for implementing professional learning communities, and I appreciated the non-negotiables. I think that's essential. And so today I thought I could talk for a long time, longer than 15 minutes, but I will focus on the ACT goals that you've set for the district. I had read your high reliability high school. Your five-year achievement goal was to make sure that Logan High School, all students are reaching all four of the ACT college readiness benchmarks. Now, in your handout I gave you, you have the 2015 Utah information on ACT. Obviously, I don't have access to Logan's, but we can look at Utah as an overall. By 2019, students should reach all four. They'll surpass the national average. I thought these are good goals. They are achievable. I think they could also be a stretch. This is not something that can be done tomorrow. It's something that's going to have to take. It will be a pattern of improvement over a couple years. I was looking at the composite scores, and these are I would understand that the ACT is a test that is purchased by the state for all students to participate in. And the average composite score is 20, and you can see that English, 59% of Utah students met the English, and 44 met reading. Math was 34, and science was 34. As I was looking at that, if you will turn with me in your book, on page 4, it just talks about how to improve scores and increase college readiness. It's page 4 in your handout, and when I looked at this, the key to me was making core curriculum a priority, emphasizing the need for all students to develop college and work-ready skills regardless of post-secondary aspirations. I think that's a priority, and I think we can look at these scores and see where we can improve. It also talked about making sure students are taking the right kind of courses, that students need to be enrolled in 4 years of English, 3 years of math, science, and social studies. That's based on the ACT research that they've found. Students who are in core curricula, core or more, score higher on the ACT. And then I liked the evaluating rigor of courses. And I think that's where, as a professional learning community, we come together and we look at what are our essential learnings. And then we need to be meeting with the middle school to see where are we college ready or algebra ready by eighth grade, because that impacts what we can do at the high school level. So, and then as I went on, I looked at page 8 when it talks about core or more. It's important. In the state of Utah, you can see the trends from 2011 through 2015. We have the core or more is in the left column. And you can see that students who are in core or more, which means they have taken 4 or more years of English and 3 or more years of science, math, or social studies, you can see that their score, the percentage of students passing, is much higher than those who take fewer are not enrolled in the core or more, which I think is one way to address this need for, or address this goal to improve ACT scores. This is a great starting point. understanding which student characteristics can predict future performance is important, and that's where the ACT study, the research that came out, the importance of knowing where we are at the middle school. And the Forgotten Middle came out in, obviously, 2008, but the eighth grade has a larger impact on college and career readiness and helping making sure students are on time to graduate than anything that happens academically in high school, and that was part of their research findings. So what's happening in the eighth grade, grade-wise, attendance-wise, behavioral-wise, those three things are important. And there we go. So if we know, if we can work with the middle school, that's one way to address this goal for ACT, because we need to make sure our eighth graders are in school and that they are, where are they grade-wise and their curriculum, and how are they growing emotionally and socially. I appreciated your graphic that you had, you shared with us, and I do believe that in order to address this goal that the district has set, we need to make sure that we have professional learning communities in place. It is cyclical. We have to continue to evaluate what we're doing. That's the importance of the question that you asked. How do we define 21st century learning? We are reflecting on our own practices. We're seeking better practices, and we're willing to ask tough questions that guide and direct our own learning. Oh, and the collaboration piece is essential. I do have a strong feeling that if we combine rigor, relevance, and relationships and that collaboration, we will create a culture of excellence. We have to have that relationship with our staff and our students. And the mantra, rigor, relevance, and relationships, it probably should be reversed to relationships, rigor, and relevance. The coursework needs to be relevant to the student. It needs to be something that they see will benefit them. But that relationship piece sometimes can pull a student who may not really like geometry, but that connection with that teacher or connection with the school keeps them involved and keeps them moving forward, even if the coursework is challenging. I did, in your handout, you will see in the back after the tab, I included a team analysis of a common assessment. It's important that we all know what a teacher team, professional learning community team, needs to know what the work is. And in here, I reference the book Kid by Kid, Skill by Skill. When we look at what it is we are assessing, what is important when it comes to the essential questions, the alignment of curriculum, and then we need to identify each individual student and where they are growing. The four questions that we ask, what do we want all of our students to learn and be able to do? We need to be able to answer that. And we need to be able to do that as a team. Same with how will we know if they've learned it and can they do these things and how will we respond if they don't? And I think when you look at some of the resources that are available to us, that we can move forward and look at that research and move the PLC process forward, because really it's coming down to what's best for each individual student. And I wanted to share with you just a common assessment form that would give you an idea of something I would consider using. Again, it is the PLC process. If you read the four questions, or if you put those in your philosophy of education, it really does address each individual learner's need, that student who's coming from a non-English speaking home, or the student who's a single parent home and minimum wage job and it's tough for the family, or the student who's coming from a two parent home, college, parents have college degrees and they have that support system there, or that the goal in mind that they will attend college. So that has been that's part of their parents' vision for them, and they want to move forward as well. These questions guide the vision. I wanted to visit about this a bit. I feel like my role as an administrator is to uphold the non-negotiables and set that as a goal and keep that in the forefront at the school. That ACT goal, that would be an amazing goal. And can you imagine the celebration the school would have when that was reached by 2017, and then align those school goals with the achievement goals of the district.
I obviously won't read through all that, but my first priority would be to create a culture of trust, that students trust that what we are doing is in their best interest, and that we have established this culture, and it's throughout the teaching, the faculty, the support staff, and the community. That's important to me. And just reflect back, this would be, I can see this would be an excellent goal. I think it can be achieved, and I think it can be achieved through a collaborative working group, not only at the high school level, but within the community. And I did want to address this part, because I've talked a lot about academics, and ACT came out with a study on, well, what about activities? Because I'm a very pro sports and activities person, so I don't want to leave that out. Part of creating a culture of excellence is making sure students are involved in the activities of the school. And at the back, after your team analysis, that handout of a sample of how to track student achievement, there is a study that the ACT did on the importance of activity and achievement. And it will, and in the study, it says, there are wide-ranging benefits to students' participation in high school activities. Students can develop new skills, broaden their experiences, practice social skills, and increase their appeal to college admission personnel. In addition, ACT data includes that regardless of a student's high school GPA, involvement in high school activities is often associated with higher ACT composite scores. There is a point they have of diminishing returns that if you're involved in too much, your academic score might go down. But what's important here is that students involved in school and the activities of the school, there is data to show that, one, they'll stay in school and that their ACT scores will improve. They actually do increase. With that, I just would say I would support ensuring that all students learn at high levels, and that Logan High School would become or will be or maintain their high reliability organization status. So with that, if you have questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
3 minutes.
Or I can continue to. No, I'm just.
Thank you so much. Appreciate you coming today. Do you have any questions for us?
Well, I want to thank you. This has been, well, Susan said, is it right? Am I Susan Red? She had said, some people, it's quite intimidating when you first come. But at the end of the day, you're like, this was amazing. This is an amazing experience. You know, to just be able to reflect on your own practices and what is important to you, and then to share that with other people, I thought, usually you have to write a paper. And so you write your philosophy, and you turn it into a professor. And it's not that you get to vocalize it necessarily. And so I appreciate that opportunity.
Wonderful.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Did I sit my green sheets on? I have the one. No, I just brought my packet straight up. Did she have extra? I think I know where they're at.
Yeah.
Yes. Oh. Honestly, woman. She right on mine. Honey Morgan. All right. I've got got mine now. Gee, how did she get mine?
We can score what we've got.
No, where's our, where's ours are different, but these are to be scored here. No, we're scoring the presentation. You're scoring the questions.
She can have it. It settles
herself. Did you see that Barbara Beckstein died?
No. Our Barbara? The USDA Vice President died.
What?
USDA Vice President. He's the one from St. George just passed away. The one.
Really?
Yes. Yeah.
That's going to be interesting. I know. Last week, they were telling me she was not doing well, but they were hoping she had cancer. Right after she was nominated, she
Thank
developed
you.
Cancer.
And her husband just
I handed it back to Diana Cohen today.
Because then you start searching for things and you're kind of
Well, and that's why I just said, do you have anything for us?
I think the best thing is to see if that's
It's turned off right now.
Right, step down, take notes.
That'd be nice. You should have a couple of them.
That's right. It's have fun, right? Okay. Thanks, Suzanne.
All right, we're going to start 5 minutes ahead, so everyone put your lunches away, your crinkled crinkles. And we now have our next candidate, who is Eric Markworth. Eric, this is in an open session of the board meeting, so It is tape recorded for humanity, so we just want you to make sure you're aware of that. The board has 5 questions. Each one of us will ask you a question. You have 15 minutes for those 5 questions, and then we will have you do your presentation.
All right, I get to ask the first question, which is, how do you define 21st century learning for students, staff, and environments?
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for lunch, by the way. I appreciate it. That was very nice. Okay. So how do I define 21st century learning for students, staff, and environments? Our district mission says it really well, and you can see that up on the screen. Ensuring all students leave our schools ready to create a positive future for themselves and their community. We have taken that at our school at Hillcrest, and we've made, that's a little wordy for a kindergarten, right? For a kindergarten student. So what we have done is we have taken that, asked our students what it means to them, asked our staff what it means to them and our community, and they came up with learn, create, and lead. And so I think if I can sum up for students what we want them to do, we want them to learn. The essential purpose of our school is student learning. Also, we want them to create. We want them to be creative and use the skills that they have to make this world a better place. And that comes through the arts, comes through activities, it comes through the other extracurricular activities and clubs that our students are involved in. And then finally, to be able to lead. And leadership is not a position, it's a choice. And so as we look at leadership and all that it entails, we want to make sure that our students are given every opportunity to lead so that they can make that positive impact in the future. For staff, in some ways we teach differently today than we did years ago, but in some ways good instruction is good instruction. And that starts with knowing your students. No significant learning can take place without a significant relationship between the teacher and the learner. We also want to lower the hierarchy of learning. We don't want that to be a top-down. We want all to be elevated to the status of a learner. And, you know, that's what this is all about. This is what our teachers should be learning as well as their students, and they should be learning from each other. And then how do I define a 21st century environment? Employers are looking for skills. They're looking for people skills. They're looking for communication. They're looking for students to be able to take information and analyze that and use it in a meaningful and purposeful way. And so a 21st century school environment is full of love and caring, but also is full of wonderful technology defined as helping the teachers and the students learn in a more effective way. That's how I define it.
Thank you.
Okay, Eric. My question has 2 parts. So describe your experience working with changing demographics, particularly socioeconomic, cultural, and language diversity, then share how you might use your experience and insight to close the achievement gap.
Okay, thank you. I think in a way I have a unique educational leadership experience. I've worked literally with students from preschool all the way to the university level. I've been a principal at a K preschool through 5 school for the last 9 years. I taught at Logan High for 6 years, and I worked with at middle level. I was a history teacher there as well. And then I currently teach, I'm an adjunct professor at Utah State University, and I teach an introduction to elementary ed class there. I have seen learners in various capacities through those experiences. In particular, as we look at socioeconomic status, we're also in a unique position at Hillcrest because we have a split boundary. We have students that come from a very wealthy area up on the hill,
And we have students that come from very challenging socioeconomic circumstances that live in Aggie Village and live in our apartments and our trailers on the west side of Logan. So I work with those students every single day. I have enjoyed my time working with the parents and also the students of multi-ethnic groups and ethnicities, literally coming from every continent in the world except for Antarctica, which we know only as penguins, right? So there's no penguins there. And also language diversity. I have worked with students not only as a teacher, but also as a principal and also at the university level. We had a student at the university level that came to us from Korea, and she wanted to be a teacher. And so we had some challenges with language between her and I, but we were able to work it out. We were able to have her get notes from another student in the class. We were able to help her succeed so that she could be on her track to become a teacher. So my experience there in closing the achievement gap has been vast. I've worked hard to look at the changing demographics at Hillcrest and in the 9 years that I've been there to help our students achieve at high levels through the professional learning community process, through looking at data, and also building those relationships between the teachers and myself. We've been able to support the teachers, which is really the best way you support students is to support the teachers. And so I feel like the skills that I have, all the way again from preschool all the way up to the university level, has prepared me to help with the changing diversity at Logan High School.
Okay. Thank you.
Tell me about a time you developed a shared vision for a school in which multiple visions existed. And then can you describe in detail the process you followed?
Thank you. Thanks, Lisa. Well, again, we just went through this at Hillcrest. We had a faculty meeting, and I had a gift certificate to Goldstone Creamery. And I put it down on the table, and I said, if anybody can tell me what our mission statement is, I will give you this gift certificate. And I told them it was worth like $1 million. You know what I mean, to make it really good. It was only worth like $5, but, you know. Nobody could tell me what our mission statement was at our school. Not one teacher. I couldn't tell you what it was. It had been made before I got there. It had been made before a lot of our teachers had worked there. We've had a high turnover for various reasons in our district in the last couple of years. So after we went to a professional learning community conference in November, we sat down together with my leadership team, and we said, we have got to have a clear vision. We've got elements of a vision. We've got elements of a mission. But we don't have anything that really students can really understand, and also the stakeholders in our school. So what we did is we put up a poster board at our faculty meeting, and we said, everybody on this sticky note, write down one word that you think describes our purpose. Why do we exist as a school? And we had varied answers. We had from learning to rigor to achievement, and we took all those, typed them all up, and we handed those out to the faculty and said, from these words, come up with something that will help define what our purpose is as a school. So every grade level came up with a mission statement, and I took all of those mission statements, we put it on a Survey Monkey, we sent that out to all the teachers and all the staff, and we said, vote for the ones you think that match why we're here. And that's when we came up with the Hillcrest Huskies Learn, Create, and Lead. And so quickly, shortly thereafter, we hurry and ordered some, because, you know, it has to be visible, right? It has to be something that people can see. So we hurry and ordered banners for our school to put up, and those are up in our school at this time. The other part of that is a vision, and that's not only why we exist, but, you know, how do we get there? What do we do? What's our plan? Every year at our school, we come up with a theme. We come up with, this year it's Hillcrest Huskies Go for the Gold, because we have the Olympics coming up, and so This allows us an opportunity for our students to have something, a goal to work for. And so that last year it was leaders of the pack, that that we have the power to act with courage and kindness. And so every year we've had some kind of theme that has gone along, and now we'll continue to have that going along with our new mission statement.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Please describe your experience in developing a schedule of classes for a school. Who or what should be involved? When should the process begin? How do you address multiple competing priorities in scheduling?
Okay, thank you. All right, full disclosure, I've never put together a master schedule. That's not anything that I've ever done. But I know that there are people who have done it at Logan High School and have done it well. Our counselors have an amazing insight on how to do this. I have, as a department head, when I was the social studies department head at Logan High School, I know I was involved in that process. We were given the classes that we were to teach, and so together with our department, we put that together. And then we would give that to Principal Hanke or Principal Swenson or Principal Hansen, whoever it was, and then he would put together a master schedule. Again, this is an area I would need support in. This is an area that I would ask lots of questions, and I would try and find out what is the best way to come up with a master schedule. So who should be involved? All the stakeholders in our school should be involved. Our teachers should be involved. We need to know what classes are being taught, make sure we're following the requirements that we need for accreditation and graduation requirements. We should involve our counseling department and our principals as well. When should the process begin? Yesterday, right? That should be an ongoing process. Coming up with the master schedule, coming up with the catalog of classes, trying to meet those needs of a 21st century learner are a lot different than they were many years ago, even when I taught at Logan High. So the process should be an ongoing process. I know they're in the process of doing that currently, both at the middle school and the high school. And, communication should be sent out to our parents and to our students so that they know. I'm old enough to remember the old computer cards for registration. That's how old I am. And, I know that's not the most effective way to do it anymore. So now it's done through technology. And, we have programs that help with that information. So how do I address multiple competing priorities in scheduling? Well, again, I think that's a collaborative process. I think the people who know that best are the people who should be making those decisions. I don't pretend to be necessarily an expert at that, but I will put the people in the right spots on the bus so that they can do it.
Okay, Eric, this is the last one. What qualities, abilities, and skills do effective instructional leaders demonstrate? And tell me your strongest characteristic as an instructional leader.
Okay. Thanks, Connie. Our superintendent talks a lot about attributes and skills and beliefs, that we need to have in our district and that our students need to have to be successful. I believe that's also true for our leadership. I feel like I have a few years ago, as part of our professional development with our teachers, we took strengths finder, where we sat down as a staff and also myself, and we took a very long questionnaire to determine what our strengths were. And my strengths that came out of that particular assessment was that I'm a context person. And what I mean by that is I take things in context before we move forward. I look back to look forward. And so I am one of my strengths is traditions, is beliefs, is those attitudes and skills that we need to be successful as a team. Logan High School is a team. Just like any athletic team or any other extracurricular activity, we are a team. And so that's me. I'm a context person. The other thing, the other that assessment came out was that I am a communicator. I can communicate with different stakeholders and people in not only education but also in the community. I built some great relationships with, and I know this, you know, we talk about the most important people in the building. Who are the most important people? Is that my time? Okay. It's your custodians, it's your secretaries, it's your teachers, it's your staff and faculty. So I can bring those people together through communication, through listening, and also those are my two greatest attributes as an instructional leader.
Wonderful. You now may move to your transition to your presentation.
All right.
And we do have our handouts.
Perfect. Okay.
You okay if I share the jacket? You guys okay?
All right. Thank you. Hi, Marcy.
Hello.
Let me just make sure this works here.
Awesome.
Works. Okay. Sweet. I believe grizzly crimson, not red, crimson, okay? Make sure there's a difference, right? Crimson and Vegas gold. The topic that we were given, as I'm sure all of you know, is that how can I, as a principal, support the district's mission and non-negotiables? And so hopefully I can share that with you today, and I want to say before I start, thank you so much for the process. I have made two new friends today. They are great, and both Kenneth and Shalene. And it's just neat to be able to network up with other educators, so thank you very much. Okay. Something happened. Okay. Okay, all right, we got it. Technology snafu. All right. And I use the word we because really this is a team effort. Okay, I'm just a part of the cog of this whole wheel of Logan High School. Here's our mission statement. You've seen it. You know what it is. It's very well thought out and very well said. The tracks that we need to be able to lay for supporting this is to align the mission, the vision, the vision, and the values and the goals of Logan High School. No matter what. And this is something you don't just look at once a year. You don't look at it once every 10 years. You look at it often and make sure that what the vision is something that we can all support and that we can continue to work toward. So that's the tracks, right? High quality instruction has more impact on student learning than any other factor controlled by the school system. Bigger than school size, class size, socioeconomic status. Effective instruction can overcome those effects. And I've seen that happen in my own experience. And finally, what's the vehicle? There's my train. All right. It's the professional learning communities. They're the vehicle that will get us there. It's the collaboration that I'll talk about here in a minute. Okay. So what is our purpose at Logan High School? What is our purpose in our district? We have to make connections, right? The district has come up with a mission statement. We've got to make, just like any type of learning, anything that we do, we've got to make connections to our own selves and how that works in our own particular situation. That might look different for a teacher than it might for our head cook. So we've got to make those connections with our purpose. And one of the things we can do is we say, what do we want our school to look like? What do we want it to sound like? And more importantly, what do we want our school to feel like? When people walk into our school, how do they feel? What do they see on the walls? Okay, what do they hear? And so that's a very important part of our purpose. And then next is our communication. You know, you can tell people many times and many things in many different ways, and you've got to do it so many different ways. And I was telling one of the groups that talking to a principal, and he would have candy in his pocket. Stacy's like, "Where's my candy?" Right? And he would walk around and say, what's our mission statement? You know, what do we believe? Who are we as a school? And if the students could tell him, he'd give him a piece of candy, right? You guys like candy, don't you? Everybody likes candy. And then also a commitment to resources. We've got to make sure that our resources match our vision. They match our purpose. Every decision that we make in our school should be based on, does this fit our mission and our purpose? And then finally, we have incentives. This is a hard profession. Teaching is hard. Full disclosure, right? There have been times when I've got down underneath my desk, right? I'm like, why did I pick this profession? This is so hard. I just had a parent yell at me, and a kid just came up and flipped me off. You know, whatever it is. Didn't wave at me at all five fingers, right? It's hard. This is a hard profession. So we've got to do things to try and remind ourselves why we got in this profession and why we stay in this profession. And that's efficacy, right? The ability to make a difference in the lives of our students because of what we do with them every single day. The next portion, a way to support and give teachers and students efficacy, is high-quality instruction. Again, I've mentioned before that nothing is more powerful than the instruction that we can provide our students. That can overcome all of those effects. You know, we've got the one question about what can we do to help socioeconomic status, what can we do to help, you know, kids with poverty, and, you know, they come in, they don't know English. We provide them high-quality instruction. We teach them. They don't know math, we teach them. They don't know reading, we teach them how to read. And if they don't know how to behave, we teach them how to behave. We got to know the why. We're asked to do a lot of things. We have a lot of plates, or a lot of things on our plate as educators. So we've got to know why we're doing this every single day. We need to be reminded of that constantly, that we are in the greatest profession in the world, but it's the most rewarding, but also the most challenging that you'll ever face. And then creating conditions for teachers and students' success. The best thing I can do is to support the teachers. I've said that many times here today, but I really do firmly believe it, because that's going to help our students succeed the best. And it starts with the elements of adult learning. I didn't realize, you know, I knew, hey, I'll be a principal, right? I'll come up. I get to work with kids every day. I expanded my classroom from 120 to 535, right? Well, actually, I increased it by another 50 because I work with adults every single day. And Jane Vella, who I love, one of my idols, says that we have to make sure that that teachers, as long as students, as well as students, are learning. And I'm going to flip through this really quick. She came up with 12 ways that 12 elements or essential principles of adult learning. And I'm just going to go through these really quick, because I think this is the basis of how we support teachers. One, we ask them what they need, right? What do you want to learn about? We ask them questions, right? Just be curious with our teachers. Then we provide a safe environment for them to learn in. There's nothing worse than being in an environment that you don't feel like you can speak. Next, we build relationships, not only among learners, but between the teacher and the learner. And then next, we have a sequence of our learning, and we provide reinforcement and support. We act upon the learning that we have learned, and then we reflect on it, right? We don't just look out the window and say, if only those parents read to them, right? If only. We look in the mirror and say, if only I did this, how would my students be supported? Learners are decision makers. Adults, the ones who are making decisions in our school, should be the ones that work with the kids every single day. And I am here to support that. Learning with ideas, feelings, and actions. We learn in many different domains, and so we need to make sure that adults learn the same way. We need to make sure that if we're learning something and we're implementing a program, if it's not working, we need to relook at it. We need that immediacy. We need dialogue to see how it's going. We need teamwork, put together in teams after we've made decisions, engage our adult learners, and finally hold ourselves accountable. It's not just the principal saying, you need to do this. We hold ourselves accountable as a team. Professional learning communities. We have been going through this process in our school for the last 2 years. The fundamental purpose of our school is student learning. Everything we do should be, that's the core of what we do. That's number one. Number two is collaboration and a collective response. Teachers getting together, allowing them time, and allowing them ability to be able to make decisions and then respond. I don't just have the 120 kids or 140 kids, whatever it is, in my classroom. I have the 1,700 kids that are in Logan High. I'm responsible for every single one of those to help them succeed. And then the last pillar of professional learning communities and support is focus on results and being willing to take a critical eye and look at every single program in our school and see if it's benefiting students or not. Recently, I had a veteran teacher, been teaching over 20 years, came up to me and he said, at our school, our focus has always been on students. But this year, I feel like our focus, oh, it's up there. It's not on my screen. Now our focus is on student learning. There's a difference between just focusing on students and focusing on student learning. And that was an aha for him. Talking to a principal recently of a big high school, and I said, how do you make a big school feel small? I'm coming from, I think the best thing that I could do to prepare for this position was to be an elementary principal for the last 9 years. Because I learned so much about student engagement, about instruction, working with kids, working with parents. Elementary teachers are absolutely amazing. And they care about those kids. And I know middle school and high school teachers do as well. But how do you make this big school, this big ominous school, feel small? Well, I think what you do, the best way is to individualize our students' experience. Right? Every single student in our school should think, as parents, you send them to us every day. You trust us, right? To send them to us to our school every single day. And so we need to be able to individualize that student experience so that you know that we know who your students are. Because the two most important things, as I've reflected on this recently, oh, there's the Logan High. Okay, go Grizz. When you send your students to school, you want them to feel safe. Not only feel safe, but be safe. Okay? If they're being bullied, if they're being whatever, we want them to feel safe. Second, we want them to feel cared for. Know that they understand that there is a relationship between them and the adults in that school. And then finally, I don't know about you, but as parents, what do I ask my kids? What did you learn at school today, right? What did you learn? We want to know what our students have learned, what our kids have learned. And we need to be able to answer those questions. We need to feel safe, cared for, and finally, for them to learn. Okay. So the two most important things, because as I reflected on this again, these are the most important things I can do to support the district's mission and non-negotiables. Is number one, supporting teachers to be the most effective that they can be. Efficacy. They can make a difference. They can come to me and disagree with me. We can have a dialogue. We can talk to each other and say, you know what, it's okay. I get where you're coming from. Yeah, I think that's a better way. Let's do it. A way to do that, maybe a model for doing that is being in every conversation that I'm with a teacher. And I have to remind myself every day, right? I'm sitting at my computer typing up an email, and a teacher walks in, I have to literally turn in my chair. I have to be in that conversation or get up and walk over to the table. Teachers and kids know when you're on your cell phone, right, or you're on your computer. They know when you're not in a conversation. And so I will be in. I'll be there for the teachers. Teachers will know that I'm an advocate for them. And I just read the article in the paper today. Did you see that? I don't know if you saw that. A group sings a choir national anthem down at the Capitol. Wrong place, right place at the wrong time, right? What did Principal Swenson say? I support my teacher. She did exactly what was right. She wasn't doing anything wrong. That's what we need. We need that public support for our teachers. And then finally is being with, right? Be with teachers. Be there with them. We're going to laugh. We're going to cry. It's going to be a bumpy road. It's going to be hard. You know, I'm going to make mistakes as a leader. Every single day I'm going to make a mistake. Probably more than one, right? And so you need to know that I'm there with you and you're there with me. Okay, one. Thank you. Enjoyment. Do we love our jobs? Do we love what we do? I don't know. Sometimes it's hard, right? So the second most important thing is to support teachers in the collaborative process of meeting student needs. Support them in their time, in their trust, or their talents, excuse me. And then finally, trust. Teachers have got to trust that the principal, the leadership, is there for them. And that they will, and then finally, let's have fun. Let's enjoy our jobs. You know, I think sometimes this is too hard to not enjoy what we do every single day. Let's have fun. So I think my time is almost up. How will I support this district mission to ensure all students leave our schools ready to create a positive future for themselves and their community? I'm doing it right now. I'm helping our students succeed, helping our teachers, giving them what they need. I just want to take that from what I'm doing now currently to just another level. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Eric.
Shake the other hand.
The reaching back is the problem with Lisa standing there.
I know, but you walk past and shake, go back and shake their hands. How do you feel those students feel? Do you walk the car?
Well, because maybe, you know, push around Lisa, but
I know.
But there are those things that are noticed.
Thanks, Rick.
Sure.
Texted Frank about a bill.
About what?
A bill.
What?
I don't know which one it was, but it was okay. It's an Ed Red. It probably needs to be dealt with by somebody. So that's why he's back with Jeff right now. He's saying, will you please contact Ed Red?
The vice president in anything, and they told me she's been really sick.
Well, when did she get the sick sense?
Right after she was elected a year ago.
Yeah.
And she was at the meeting in Chicago. She had lost 50 pounds since a year ago. And, you know, she was a brand new board member, but had been a teacher all along. And she beat Jody and somebody else. And so I said, so then and they said, well, we decided we're not going to do anything until we know what her health really is. Because she's been told, you're no longer in this position because you can't come. And according to they announced she passed away today.
So I wonder what they'll do.
They have sometimes moved someone up and then have two elections. Have a double election for vice president.
So they would have to go now to a multiple district, correct? If they
to replace her, it would be a single district.
Yeah.
Single district.
Ken, when you're ready to where you
look for more.
All right.
Chrissy, I didn't get that text or email. No. Was it on Facebook or was it on the other one? I asked last week what we had, what would happen.
And what'd they say? Could they just move up?
They said we decided we would not discuss it until we knew more, you know, specifics.
Well, about the only way they could do it is go to a single district and pick someone out now.
That would move people up and then have a mid-year election or something.
But next year, that would work next year.
Or elect two people next year, you know, two, whatever.
Well, she's present next year.
Oh, wow. Yeah, so it would be much better to move a person up. Luckily, Mary's been involved instead of just a newbie who's never done anything. Connie, that you've got two people. Okay, and she went down to the restroom. Would like to get ready. We'll start in about a minute. So if everyone can put their packages away and their finish your conversations on a positive note, we'll be starting in just a minute. Appreciate all of you staying and not interrupting during going in and out. It's been really great. We do as a board really appreciate you, and as a district really appreciate your participation today and truly being able to watch you as stakeholders as you interacted with our candidates was a very amazing process. So as soon as the superintendent finds Connie, we will be starting.
There's the line.
Yeah, it's not hard.
Susan, will you get Frank? We need to start.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We welcome you to this final part of our interview process. We know it's a long, involved process, but we appreciate your time and attendance here with us. We have five questions. You have approximately 15 minutes to answer them.
and each board member will be asking you a question.
Okay.
All right, and I'm going to start. The first question is, how do you define 21st century learning for students, staff, and environments?
I define 21st century learning as opportunities for students to demonstrate growth in the classroom, that students have the opportunity to be actively engaged in learning, and that teachers have the skills and abilities to help students be successful. I think that when students are successful in class, teachers feel like their contribution matters, and it creates an environment for all students to feel valued and wanted, and feel valued and appreciated. And also they want to be involved in school when they are able to be successful. I think technology is a big part of the 21st century learning. Students have technology in their hand. They have instant access to anything that they want. And I think we have to utilize those technologies to advance education and advance our students so that they can be more proficient in academics.
Thank you.
Okay, my question has two parts. Describe your experience working with changing demographics, particularly socioeconomic, cultural, and language diversity. Then, if you would share how you might use your experience and insight to close the achievement gap.
Okay, I currently work in a very diverse community and low socioeconomic students, and I really believe that my experience has been working with all different types of kids, working with all different types of parents, and finding strategies for those students to be successful. I have found that in my experience, how I have been successful in helping achieve the close the achievement gap is finding solutions and ways to help students in the classroom. When students participate in learning, it doesn't matter what their skills are. If they have opportunities to participate and they have good experiences in the classroom, they're going to achieve. As I've worked with kids that come from poor environments, it's important to have parents involved in the process. The more you can involve parents in their students' education, the reality is the more successful those students will be. And so sometimes you have to have parent nights in the evening. You can't do things that you may typically do during a school day. You have to make things available for parents who may not be able to come during the school day and to get involved in their students' education or to meet with their teacher. I also think that being able to help teachers learn how to accommodate and modify curriculum to meet the needs of all students. Students that come with deficits in the classroom, they need attention. They need opportunities to be successful as they do their work. At the same time, students that are high achievers also need to be challenged, and they need greater depth in the classroom. And so I think as teachers modify and accommodate assignments, as they work with ELL students, as they apply those skills, all those students can have success and have growth. And I think technology, using technology in the classroom, helps bridge that gap. Giving kids resources, not having kids just write notes every day for an hour, isn't going to help kids be engaged. It's actively learning, helping facilitate their learning through technology so that they can have different experiences in the classroom and demonstrate that they are proficient in many ways, not just in the traditional way of taking a test.
Thank you.
Tell me about a time when you developed a shared vision for a school in which multiple visions existed. And can you describe in detail the process you followed?
Sure. in every school, everyone has an opinion of how that school should be. I've been in two high schools, and there have been people who have had different visions of what the school should be. The district has their vision. As an administrator, I have my vision, and teachers have their vision of what that school should be. The process that I use is a collaborative process. How can we come together and come up with a collective vision that benefits all people that are involved, certainly our students? And I think as the instructional leader, my job is to facilitate that process. It can't just be about what I think should happen in the school. It can't just be about what teachers think should happen in the school. It has to be a collective process. The more buy-in that you have from students and teachers, the greater success you have in reaching that vision or goal. And so as I collaborate with teachers and I get their ideas, and as I survey parents and get their feedback, it helps me get a view of what vision the community has for the school. And then the process is working with your leadership team and your teachers to make that happen and have it come together. And it's a slow process. It's not an overnight process. It's a process of having relationships and building those relationships and then instituting the process of reaching those goals and creating step-by-step processes to reach those goals so that you can achieve your vision.
Thank you.
Please describe your experience in developing a schedule of classes for a school. Who or what should be involved? When should the process begin? How do you address multiple competing priorities in scheduling?
Well, currently in the district I'm in, the master schedule is based on student request. The things that students want are the things that we offer students. Certainly, we want to involve teachers, counselors in the process of developing the schedule. You need feedback from what teachers want as well. You can't just impose a schedule on teachers without having their input, because they are the ones that have to fulfill the schedule. But I think it's really important that student requests are paramount, because if students are happy and they're getting the courses they want, then they're more likely to come to school and they're more likely to be successful in school. So I think students and teachers need to be involved. I think counselors are a critical role as they assist in creating registration cards, as they put those cards into the computer, as they identify what classes students want, it helps build that schedule. The process really should begin, in my opinion, in building the schedule at the beginning of the year. As you start the school year, things that teachers are interested in teaching are things that they should be bringing that to the attention of the administration so that we can address those things. Concurrent classes, there's a process to be connected to the college and teach college classes. You can't just do that overnight. There's a process. So things that teachers are interested in teaching from a college level or AP level, it's really imperative that that information is brought up early in the process so that they can meet the qualifications so you can add those classes. How do you address multiple competing priorities? I think it comes down to what students want. There's no reason to teach classes other than with the state mandated courses, right? That students don't want. Students have this is where they spend the majority of their day. They should be able to take courses that appeal to them and that are interesting to them. And so I think you have to weigh that out as you make those decisions. I think you have to make those decisions with data, and they have to be thought-provoking decisions, because the decisions you make with the schedule certainly affects the whole school. And unfortunately, when you're over the schedule, you can't make everybody happy. That just comes with creating a schedule. But I think you do your best to provide what students want and what parents want their students to participate in when it comes to curriculum at school.
Thank you.
And the last question is, what qualities, abilities, and skills do effective instructional leaders demonstrate? And tell us your strongest characteristic as an instructional leader.
I think the qualities of an effective instructional leader are being honest, having integrity, working hard, being in the trenches with your teachers, developing relationships that they feel that they're valued and appreciated. I think recognizing the small things that people do that have a huge contribution to your school and the climate and culture of the school. I think an effective instructional leader has to be able to know good teaching when they see it. They also have to be willing to have difficult conversations and to be able to give teachers feedback on things that they do very well, and also give them feedback on things that they need to improve on or get better at. The craft of teaching is a process. And as educators, we are always trying to learn and develop our craft. So I think also the skills you have to have is you have to be able to be consistent. You have to be fair. You have to have high expectations. You have to be welcoming. And you have to be willing to listen to people and to listen to their concerns and try to come up with solutions so that they feel that their contribution matters. I think my strongest characteristic is that I believe in people. I believe that people have amazing strengths and their contribution matters. I think my belief in students and their ability to change a community and to change a culture is just remarkable. The time that students put in to make a school, a high school, a great place is a huge sacrifice for kids. They give up a lot of their free time to make it better. And I value that, and I think it's important. And I think I also value the small things that people do. I think recognizing those things are important.
Yeah, 2 minutes. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Being an instructional leader is a big responsibility, and at the end of the day, you have to be a person that's willing to communicate what the district would like you to do and to motivate teachers and staff members to do that. You have to be able to motivate people to embrace change. Change is hard. And in the 21st century, school today is very different than school in the 1960s or 70s. And so as the instructional leader, you have to be a motivator, and you have to encourage people to make some of those difficult changes. And I think that's really what it means to be an effective instructional leader.
Thank you. All right, we can move right into your presentation.
Okay. All right. So all teachers need tools for the changes in education. As a principal, I need to develop positive relationships with teachers and students so they feel valued and listened to, so that they have the tools to be successful in the classroom. But also they have the tools, students have the tools to be successful in life. The mission of the Logan District is all students develop the skills that will allow them to create positive futures for themselves and their community. This is important an important process for every teacher, faculty member, and student to understand the mission of the district, because we want kids to have a positive future, and we want them to be effective in the community. And that starts really in elementary school and as they develop through their school experience. What do teachers know is an important element of understanding where teachers are at, certainly with the non-negotiables from the district. I personally would survey teachers and get feedback from them on their depth of understanding the non-negotiables. I think once you understand where teachers are at, you can help, assist, encourage, and motivate them to move forward. But you have to know where they're at. I think teachers need to be a part of the process. I think that you can't be functional in any school by yourself. And it certainly can't be us against them. It has to be a collective effort. And teachers have to have buy-in to what you're trying to accomplish in helping kids be successful. And you also have to have the buy-in from the students. They're the ones that have to perform. They're the ones that have to demonstrate the proficiency. What they contribute and their contribution is just as important as the teachers or anybody else. Positive behavior supports. A school-wide behavior system of support is really critical to the success of students. You can't just focus on the negative things that students do. Unfortunately, in life, sometimes we focus on the things that are wrong. We really need to reinforce the things that kids do well, especially students who may struggle in school, who may misbehave in school. We need to reinforce their behavior by rewarding positive behavior and not only focusing on negative behavior. And what's been really successful in my experience is having some sort of a pride program where teachers can give kids tickets, catching them doing the right thing, giving them a simple acknowledgement for doing work, for being good citizens, for helping a peer, for helping a teacher, for doing the right thing. It may be as simple as coming to class on time for some students. It's important to reinforce the positive that students do. Articulated learning objectives and targets is the next non-negotiable. Content and language objectives provide direction in every teacher's lesson. It's important that that those learning objectives provide a foundation for assessment and also engagement activities. It answers the PLC question, what do we want students to learn? That has got to be the focus of every class. What is it that you want your kids to know when they walk out of your class? And then what ownership do those students have to learn that information and to walk out with that information? Oh, the volume. Well, I think we'll just skip this slide then. we just adjust, right? That was a depiction of what not to do in the classroom. I love that clip from Ferris Bueller's Day Off, because sometimes we get in ruts and we ask questions and we answer our own questions. As a teacher, we want our students to have opportunities to respond. We want them to be involved in engagement activities. We want to assess their skills multiple times. We want them to demonstrate that they have developed skills and become proficient. As the principal, I would encourage our teachers to try new engagement activities and strategies in their classrooms and use the PLC process to collaborate and see if those activities work. See if the success that teachers have as they engage kids in learning. Kids who are excited about learning become proficient. Kids that are bored in class don't want to go to class. So it's important that we that I allow teachers to be able to share their successes with engagement and assessment in faculty meeting and in the PLC process. Gradual release of responsibility is the next non-negotiable. The I do it, which is the focus of the lesson, the teacher's focus, the we do it, which is the guided practice, students working with the teacher, and then the collaboration piece is really an important piece. You do it together. Small groups, think pair shares, activities that get kids talking and teaching each other are the most valuable experiences in how kids learn. Teachers always learn more than the pupil. Well, in the classroom, it's no different. If students are able to teach each other and participate in that process, then they will be proficient in the things that they teach. As I observe teachers and I see these elements of gradual release of responsibilities in the classroom, I know that students are working towards proficiency because these strategies are tested and researched, and students have success when those elements are in the classroom. The assessment cycle is really important. Assessment should be purposeful and meaningful and should happen multiple times in a period. Informal and formal assessment answers the question, how do we know if and when students have learned what we wanted them to learn? That's an important skill to have in class. As teachers assess students, they're able to identify what skills they developed and what skills that they're lacking. In addition to, they're able to adjust their lessons to address those concerns. They are able to help students as they identify where their deficit. And it also allows them to evaluate students' learning. Feedback. Feedback is the next non-negotiable, and feedback is critical to students' growth and success. It must be timely, specific, actionable, and consistent. It should provide direction, motivation, and update students' progress. Teachers that give students instant feedback have greater success in the classroom. But what's just as important as teachers giving feedback is students giving feedback to teachers on how they're becoming proficient, where they currently are, where they currently are heading. When students can identify where they are at in the process, then there's some accountability to move that process along. It's not just on the teacher for the student to become proficient. It also has some accountability for the student to become proficient and to be able to articulate what they need to do to become more proficient. And differentiation answers the PLC question, how will we respond when our students don't learn, and how will we enrich and extend learning for students who are proficient? I love this slide because differentiation is not a curriculum. It is a way of thinking about teaching and learning. Differentiation is synonymous with good teaching. The process of being able to teach students at different levels is the mastery of being a teacher. The one size that fits all does not work. It has never worked, and it leaves out kids who may need additional help, and it leaves out kids who are gifted and need deeper enrichment. It is the challenge of every teacher and as a principal to be able to help them learn how to continue to develop their skills in differentiating in the classroom and to be able to identify those students that need some additional help and communicate that with parents. The more involved parents can be in a kid's learning, the more successful the student's going to be. One of the challenges with, obviously, with lower socioeconomic circumstances or sometimes parents aren't available to help their students. Sometimes they don't have the skills to help their student. Well, the great thing about a high school is we do have the skills to help every student, and we do have the ability to help every student. And so, in conclusion, I would just like to say one of the unique things about Logan High School is it really has two campuses. They have a south campus and a main campus. I think one of the valuable things about that is that each of those students should feel a part of Logan High School. As I visited the south campus, I had the opportunity to hear some things about the students and their love for that campus. And every student should have that love for Logan High School. And that is based on the relationships that students have with teachers and with administrators and with staff members. The more positive relationships that students have, the more they want to be around the school and the more they want to participate and contribute. As the principal, I need to be involved. I need to help parents feel involved and feel part of the school. Have to be available for them to voice their concerns, ideas, and wants for the high school. Students need to feel appreciated and valued and need to know that we believe in them to be successful. We believe that they can achieve great things and that they have the greatest opportunity going to Logan High School to do so. And teachers need to feel the support of the administrator and administration, and they need to also grow and develop their skills. As soon as you feel like you know it all, you're already behind because there's always things to learn and there's always things to develop. And as the instructional leader, it's my responsibility and passion to help teachers realize and appreciate things that that they can develop and they can continue to grow and they can do hard things because education is hard, it's tough, but it's great. And we get to work with great kids. And finally, I think that Logan High School is certainly the face of this community, and it needs to be a community resource for all people that come, whether they are diverse, whether they are poor, whether they are rich. It really doesn't matter. It really needs to be a place where everyone feels that they're a part of, because it is the center of Logan, and the kids that go there are the future of this community. And I leave you with that. Thank you.
We appreciate all of our candidates today. We appreciate all of you who have, some of you have been with us since very early this morning. Before we, and you may be excused.
Thank you.
You don't have to stay and listen to me going into closed session. But I'm going to have the board have a vote first, and then Frank will give some final remarks, and then we will dismiss. So the board, now we're in open session. We need to go into a closed session to discuss the character, professional competence, physical or mental health of an individual. Is there someone who will make that motion?
I so move.
Connie Morgan has made the motion. Is there a second?
I'll second it.
All right, a second by Lynn Hobbs. I need a voice vote on the motion. Lisa Hopkins.
Yes.
Christy Cooley.
Yes.
Connie Morgan.
Yes.
Lynn Hobbs.
Yes.
Ann Geary, yes. And we will now go into closed session. Let's leave board.
Okay, the board will be going down to my office where we'll continue with the closed session, and we'll be going over some more data from their